What's good, Black Baseball Mixtape family? It's your boy Cheech here. I hope you had a wonderful, wonderful opening day, kind of end of the week, through the weekend. I hope everyone had a fantastic Easter. I spent it down in Norfolk. I was covering the Norfolk Tides, the AAA 2023 International League defending champions, an absolute juggernaut. My family was down there as well, so we got to take in some Tides games over the weekend. Had an absolute wonderful time. We've got a ton of interviews coming from that debut trip. But I'm really excited about today's episode. I'm excited about today's episode because we're going to do something today that I've always wanted to do when I started thinking of Black Baseball Mixtape and how we want to highlight Black players in the game. And what we're going to do today is actually a re-air of a podcast that I recorded last year. We're re-airing it because Trey Lipscomb debuted this week with the Washington Nationals. This is a crazy story. He wasn't initially listed on the opening day roster, but he was the first person in the Nats organization that got called up to the pros. He debuted over the weekend, got his first hit.
Hooks it to left, and we'll see how they score it. That was nasty off of Jamer Candelario. The dugout already thinks it's going to be a hit. They're calling for the baseball. That thing had some top spin on it, Franny.
His first stolen base.
Runner going. Pitch is low. Throw is high. Base is stolen.
Take the base. Take the base out.
They're calling for the bag in the third base dugout.
In his first game, and in his second game, he recorded his first home run.
Lipscomb, first up. Got a fastball. Oh, yeah. Go, ball. Rides it to right center. Benson back.
Oh, no.
And he took it off the yellow line. No. Let's call it CU, and it took a while. Later, wow. The Nats are on top. Trey's first as a big leaguer.
We're so proud of Trey, what he's been able to accomplish so far. It's been remarkable. And Trey's podcast episode that we recorded in Richmond in the clubhouse when he's playing for the Harrisburg Senators is absolutely phenomenal. He goes through his entire journey. He goes through, you know, going to the University of Tennessee, not really getting a chance to play until his senior year, having a monster senior year and getting drafted by the Nationals. The thing that stood out to me about Trey Lipscomb's story is in this day and age, you usually, if you're not playing at a top program right away, you usually transfer out. You usually don't stick through it. Trey stuck through it for 3 years till he got to the field his senior year, and he's much better off for it. I want everybody to listen to this exceptional young man, obviously a phenomenal baseball player, and take in his journey because it's awesome, and we're so happy about his success. So, with no further ado, I always got to do the housekeeping. This episode is brought to you in partnership with the Players Alliance, Stilo Sports, Orencia 21. Yo, those are all of our teams. If you want to join our team, shoot me a DM. Really excited about what we're going to do this season. But with no further ado, check out the re-airing of this amazing interview with Trey Lipscomb, who just debuted in the MLB over the weekend, right now. I am sitting across from a very, very special guest, Trey Lipscomb, third baseman for the Harrisburg Senators. He is, I believe, as currently constructed, the number 18th prospect in the Nationals organization. Trey, welcome to the mixtape.
Hey, how you guys doing? Thanks for having me.
It is an honor to have you. I'm going to start with a little bit more recent history, then we're going to go back, because as it stands right now, we are smack in the middle of the College World Series in Omaha, Nebraska. Tennessee made it to Omaha. This is where you went to school last year. You were playing for the Tennessee Volunteers, and one of the, I think it's like statistically proven, one of the greatest baseball teams in the University of Tennessee history. Are you checking out the College World Series? Did you follow this year's Tennessee team closely?
Oh, I followed them from the get-go. I still got a bunch of guys on that team that I'm really, really close with. I was there in the offseason, so just seeing them prepare and do their work in the offseason is really like, they went through a lot in the beginning of the season, but to see them come together as their own team, find their own identity, it was really, really cool. And I'm glad to say that I actually went there.
Now, when you watch something like this, is there any part of you that says, of course, you want your teammates to do well, but is there any part of you that makes you gives you a little bit of jolt about what happened to your team? Like I said, one of the historically best teams, but correct me if I'm wrong, you guys did not make it to Omaha. Is that what happened?
Yeah, no, we didn't. But we had a great season. We had a bunch of guys on that team who were really, really good, but we just couldn't pull it off in the end. We had Notre Dame, who was an older team, that come into our place, and just to see them dogpile on our field was something that I wish I could go back and play for them again, but it's not happening. But there's some guys on that team that took that to heart, and they really did. So they were able to go into Southern Miss and dogpile on somebody else's field. So I'm sure that felt good for them, just because somebody last year coming into your spot, taking over it, and just walking out with the trophy, I guess. It was pretty hard to see.
Well, talk to me about, again, one of the best single seasons at the University of Tennessee, your final year there. And from what I understand, it was almost kind of like a life lesson your whole career at Tennessee, where there was some patience that had to be involved. You get your spot. You take the absolute most of your opportunity that leads you to professional bowl. Tell me a little bit about your time at University of Tennessee. How'd you feel being there in SEC baseball altogether?
Yeah, I mean, when I was going through the recruiting process, I knew that I went on a visit there, and I knew I really wanted to go there, not just because they had all the cool gear and all that, but when Coach Vitello brought me to his office and he was sitting down with all the other coaches, it was just, they brought this family thing to me that really, like, held a special place in my heart. So I was like, really, everyone asked, why didn't you transfer? Why didn't you leave? Go closer to home. Family can see you some more. And I was like, I feel like that's my second home. They really brought a family into me, and I just really love to call that place home.
That's awesome. Talk to me a little bit about SEC weekends, some of the most competitive baseball that can be played in Division I. But not only that, every environment, including your home environment at the University of Tennessee, was just, it was nuts. It was nuts watching some of those games.
Yeah, it was crazy. We had this group of, like, frat boys who would come to the game. They'd call them, like, Lindsey Nelson legends. They would come over there, and they would always give the first baseman a hard time and talk about their girlfriend, their past. And I'm like, oh, I don't know how they're going through this. Like, I couldn't even imagine. But, yeah, I mean, lacing up those cleats on a Friday night and just running onto the field when the announcer is saying it's Friday night in the SEC just gave me a little bit of chills. But I loved it. I love every bit of it. Sometimes I have little flashbacks, and I could picture it in my head, and I'm just like, wow, I really took it for granted. But no, I'm glad that the SEC is like that.
Did you know coming in, like, I know you said you visited on recruiting and so forth, but did you know the environments coming from Maryland to the Southeastern Conference? Did you know, not just your home environments, when you would go on the road, you'd obviously play teams, Vanderbilt and LSU. Did you know these environments were just going to be crazy?
I mean, not at all. I mean, when I went to a visit, it wasn't my official visit, but me and my dad wanted to go check out the SEC game. So we went when they were playing Florida, the number one team, when they had, they had India, they had all those guys who got drafted pretty high. And we went to the game, and it was probably like, it was raining the whole weekend. It was probably 25 degrees. It was freezing. And we get to the game, and there's probably like 30 people in the stands, and I'm like, there's no way. Everybody talks about SEC, how it's always like this, and it's a bunch of fans and stuff, and me and my dad are sitting there like, there's probably like 20 open seats right next to us, and I'm just like, no way it's like this. But Coach Vitello brought like a huge, like, he brought the fan base into it, and he brought, like I said, the family aspect into it. So that last year, my junior year, you could really see it starting to take off. And then that last year was crazy. We were selling out midweek games on a Tuesday. And the people who had work at 5 p.m. were, I guess, taking off work and coming to the games to see us play, which was really cool.
That's awesome. Talk to me a little bit about your beginning and just kind of falling in love with the game. How did it start for you? When did you start playing? How did you fall in love with baseball?
Yeah, I mean, I played when I was younger. I mean, I played all the sports, football, baseball. My dad was a wrestler at the Citadel, so he wanted me to wrestle a little bit. I wrestled a little bit through there. I wasn't really a fan of it, didn't really like it, but my dad wanted to, and it brought happiness in his eyes, so I did it for a little bit. But no, I grew up playing all those sports, and then probably maybe around 5 or 6 was when I really started, like, oh, I really like this sport. And then playing it with my friends growing up, we always played all the other sports, basketball and football, but I started at maybe around 5, 6, and then probably when I moved to Florida, so maybe around 12, when they was playing baseball year round, I was like, oh, I guess I got to cut out all these other sports. I mean, these kids are, we're literally playing every weekend. Can't take any breaks. So probably, like I said, around 12, started playing travel ball, did the whole Cooperstown experiment.
Nice.
But it was fun. But so probably, I would say around 12, I started taking it really, really serious. Like, I really wanted to do this.
For people that don't know, what's the you mentioned the Cooperstown experience. What was that?
So basically, you go into Cooperstown in New York. There's a lot of teams there. I think, I want to say like around 120, maybe 200 teams there. You stay in these little dorms. They give you like these little pins, and you get to trade with all the other teams, stuff like that. Get the cool pins, get a little towel, put up all the towels and stuff. And then some of the umpires actually had pins. You wanted to get the umpire pins because they had the cool ones. Dreams Park, and it was the biggest pin. I guess that whole experience was pretty really fun.
Now, you grew up in Maryland until you moved to Florida. Baseball, we all know, is certain pockets of baseball, depending on where you're playing, you may play with other players that look like yourselves, come from the same background as you, and then there's chances where you may not see another person of color, minority, for, you know, weeks on end in travel ball season or whatever. Did you have the opportunity to play with other kids or other kids of color? Or
yeah, I did. Played baseball in Atlanta. This team called the Georgia Yard Dogs. We had kids on that team like Chase Bryant, and I'm sure you guys know the name, Mike Harris. Mike Harris is on the team. And it was just having those group of guys. I mean, it was a team full of African Americans, and we would just go out there and have fun. And the crazy part, we would show to these other parks, and we'd play these other teams, and kind of these other teams and families kind of look us like a little different. And we'd go out there, and I think run rule was still in effect, and we would beat them by 12 or something. And they're just like, oh, and you kind of walk off the field like, yeah, we really did that. Like, it's awesome to see something like that when people look at you a little differently and just go in there and just play the game of baseball, because really baseball doesn't have a color to it. Go out there and just play your game, and it's just fun.
How did you find a team? So again, Maryland, Florida, you said you played on a team in Georgia. How did you find that team?
There's a coach named Coach Boo, and I guess him and my dad met at some, I think it was like a football tournament or something. They met together, and he was like, yo, come out and play in this tournament. And around that time, I was still playing rec ball. So they were like, come play travel ball. And my dad's like, what is travel ball? And I had no idea what travel ball was either. I went out there, put my first game of travel ball, and I think I made this really cool play up the middle. I was playing shortstop at the time. Made this cool play up the middle, spin move and everything. And I was like, Dad, I really like this team. Like, it was cool going to the dugout and just celebrating and having fun. I was like, I want to play travel baseball. So after that, we played with that team for probably 3-4 years. So I got older, and then showcase ball came along when you wanted to go showcase your skills in front of the college coaches and stuff like that, which now is getting younger and younger. I got a brother who's a freshman in high school going into a sophomore year, and he's already talking about playing showcase ball. So it's like, dang, now these kids are getting recruited at ages like 12, 13, which is crazy. But it's really showing how the game is evolving. Like, everybody wants to play the sport just a little bit more. Like I said earlier, it doesn't really have a color to it. So,
when did you realize, not just that you wanted to play, but when did you realize, like, all right, you looked around and said, I may have something here. I might be one of those dudes.
Yeah, probably around the age of 14, 15 when I was playing travel ball, like I said. And I was like, I was going out there, and really I was just playing it like, just, I was playing all the other sports too. So I would just go out there on the weekend and just go out there and just really call it just hanging out with my fam or hanging out with my brothers. But when I got to the age 15, I was like, I could really do something with this, and put in the work and then grind and do all the other things that are really, really fun that come along with it, like staying in the hotels with the team and traveling with them. And I was like, oh, this is, I could really do something with this. So I would say around the age of 15 was the first time I realized that, oh, this, I can do something special with this.
Now, as you get older, so I've talked to a lot of players that are kind of in similar positions in professional baseball now, and they'll talk to me about a team like the one you just mentioned, a team whether it's in Georgia or whether it's in Alabama or Texas. As you start to raise up kind of to the elite levels, you start to see less and less of the, you know, those youth teams or travel ball teams that kind of break up. People go their certain ways. A lot of them, like you said, are multi-sport athletes. They might decide on playing another sport. So it gets a little bit harder, for lack of a better term, to connect with other players of color. You had some at the University of Tennessee, right, when you went there as well. You play on a Senators team that has
quite a few for an adult, for a Eastern League AA team, quite a few black players on it as well. What is that, having other people that possibly can relate to your experience, what does that mean for you as a player?
Yeah, I mean, just having, like you said, some people that can relate to your story just a little bit more, just to make it feel like you're not going through it alone. I mean, I roomed with James Wood, and I didn't know about him until probably when he got traded over here from the Padres, because he was 4 years younger than me.
Sure.
And then I found out he was probably 20 minutes away from Frederick, Maryland.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, this kid's from back home. But just to room with him, we shared a spring training place together. Now we room together on the road wherever we go, have an apartment in Harrisburg together. So it's kind of cool just hearing his background and him sharing his stories. And it's kind of like, I went through the same thing. Like, it's pretty cool to see that.
And I bet you it's actually something. The more players that I talk to, the more they have similar experiences, similar just shared experiences. That now you are also, you and James both, in a really unique position now that you're in Harrisburg. You just got here earlier this month, right? But you have Delino DeShields, an African-American manager, which he told me just yesterday, it's kind of like a unicorn. What is that like, having someone that you know has kind of shared some of the same experiences that you and the other players have?
Yeah, I mean, some of the stories he tells me, I mean, they go way, way back. I'm sure he shared it on the podcast yesterday.
Some, not much. He didn't give me too much. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Right. But no, just, I mean, the first day I saw him, I walked in there in spring training. I had no idea who he was. And then we connected together because actually his daughter played basketball at the University of Tennessee.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that, but I knew the last name. And so when he came here and told me that, I was like, oh, it makes sense now. But first day, I had a glove that wasn't broken in yet. He was like, "Here, give me that. Give me that glove. I'm gonna get it right for you." Within 2 days, he probably handed it right to me, and it was game ready already. So just honestly, someone to come up to me and just do that, because usually you gotta break them in yourself or find a way to do it. But for him to come up to me and give me the glove back in 2 days, when usually it takes myself probably 3-4 weeks and maybe a month to break it in, it's kind of. He was like, "Oh, here you go. Game ready." So then, show me some of those tricks, you know.
How has it been now? Obviously, you've gone through the affiliate ball. I mean, obviously, you got drafted high, and you know, short season. Now you're in affiliate ball, and you're all the way up to the AA level pretty quickly. What is the biggest adjustment at this level of playing AA baseball? Which most people say, not to put any pressure on you, but most people say this is kind of the make or break level in regards to affiliate baseball.
I mean, he talked to me yesterday about it. He asked me the same question about, like, what's the difference between here and high A and low A where you were? And I was really like, you really can just trust your approach here. You can really get in the box, have a game plan, and have an approach. And if the pitcher doesn't throw it to you, then, oh, well, then that's not your approach. But if you have the mindset to go up there and have the right approach, and knowing that if he gives you this pitch, then you can do this with it, and not just free swinging. I think that's the biggest adjustment from AA and high A and low A.
I've heard that before, and I've heard that even at the higher levels, where it's like, you know, some of the all-stars, if you look at Mookie Betts at bats or Tim Anderson at bats, and you watch a lot of film, they're like, nope, they're just waiting on their pitch. They might get a good pitch, they're not going to swing at it, but they're going to swing at it. Is discipline like, because, I mean, obviously, like you said, you played at a high level for a very long time up until this point. Are you still in the process of learning your approach and learning discipline and that stuff, or is it just kind of repeating what you know?
It's literally just having the consistent and repeating like what you know. They say baseball is a game of consistency, so it's not what you do today, but it's what you do tomorrow and the next day and the next day after that. So really just trusting my approach at the plate and just knowing I can get it done no matter the circumstances.
Absolutely. All right, let's have some fun. And some rapid fire. I'll start you with an easy one. But growing up, who are the players you looked up to? Who are your favorite players?
I really like Mookie Betts. Was a big David Ortiz fan. I mean, that swing from the left side is just you can't repeat that one. It's pretty pretty. So I was those type of fans. And obviously, I was a Jackie Robinson fan growing up, and learning his story and his background was really cool. So I guess those are my three.
If you could face any pitcher, today's game or throughout history, so any pitcher living or dead, who do you want to step in the box with? Who do you want to face?
I've always been a fan of competition, so I want the best of the best. So I guess right now I'd be Shohei Ohtani. I like to see him in the box.
Very nice. I like it. How do you think you do?
I don't know. I guess time would tell. I guess whenever I get there, hopefully he's pitching, then I'll be able to tell you then.
Very nice. Very nice. Best advice you've ever received in regards to either baseball or just life in general? When somebody was like, gave you a gem, what was the gem that you'd pass on to other players that may be, asking you, hey, how do I become the next Trey Lipscomb?
My dad told me, he always told me, tomorrow's not promised. So whatever you want to go get it today. And make sure that you leave no doubts in what you want to do. And then it's kind of something that Tennessee, that it was on the wall when you walked into the locker room, and it was, if you believe it, it's true. So if I believe I'm going to go out there and do my best, then I will. So that's kind of what my mantra, like what I live by. And it's kind of like tomorrow's not promised, so you never know. So if you really want to go get something, go get it today.
It's a good one. If Trey Lipscomb was not playing baseball for a living, what would you be doing?
I've always told myself if I could play another sport.
Oh, no, not anything.
Okay. But I'm going to start with the sport. If I could play another sport, it'd be hockey. I think hockey's pretty cool.
Have you ever played hockey?
I've never played hockey. I don't even know how to skate, so that'd be the first stepping stone.
Like it.
But not for a sport. I probably want to be like a marine biologist. I mean, there's so much of the ocean that's not discovered. They say that, like, what is it, 95% of the ocean you don't know?
No clue.
Yeah, only 5% of the ocean you know, and the ocean's huge. So there's all types of species out there, but marine biology would be pretty cool.
If you had an opportunity to do space travel, would you do it?
Probably not. I'm claustrophobic, so I don't know if I could get in something and be strapped down, so I don't know. Probably not.
Day off, you don't have any workouts or anything you have to do. What's Trey Lipscomb? Where do we find Trey Lipscomb? What you doing on a perfect day?
I really like music, not just rap music or just. I mean, I went to Tennessee, which is kind of they call it like the country school, right next to Nashville.
It's like country, capital of the world.
Right next to Nashville. So I kind of like all genres of music, hip hop, little slow tunes, something like that. So probably just listening to some music. My sister's a really good painter. She got me into painting. I can't paint like her, but I give it my best. these little canvases. I paint like album covers, like music and songs that I like to listen to. So probably on off day, probably something like that.
All right. You set yourself up for this one, so I gotta ask. No, seriously, if you can only listen to one album for the rest of your life. Doesn't have to be your favorite album, but you can only listen to one. I'll do two. You can only listen to one album, but you can pick one album and one artist. They don't have to be the same. So you can listen to one artist and you can also listen to one album. What do you pick?
Probably the artist I would choose, Future. I'm a big Future fan. I like Future's music. But there's always a time and a place for that.
Good point.
Right.
Good point. Overrated or underrated though on Future?
Future, I would have to go. I would say probably 2-3 years ago he was underrated, but now he's kind of everyone's kind
of
hopping on that wave. Yeah, yeah.
Course corrected.
Right.
There was
so,
like something that said
right.
Greatest rapper. Of all. I was like, hold on.
I don't know if he's the greatest rapper of all time.
But you know what I'm talking
about. Yeah.
I was like,
right.
We got it.
He's definitely living up to the hype as he is now.
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably album I have to listen to for the rest of my life would probably be probably the Carter Five by Lil Wayne.
Okay. I like what you did there though, because I feel like you definitely can't listen to like Dirty Sprite for the rest of your life. You got to go something that like gives you some. I like it though. I like it. When was the moment, or has there been a moment? Because you seem like a pretty even keeled guy. You seem like a pretty chill guy. Is there a moment after you got drafted and now you're in professional baseball that you kind of looked around and was like, oh, I'm really here. This is different now.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I didn't tell this in the beginning of the podcast, but just going through all the recruiting and seeing all my buddies get, like, offers and take their official visits to these really, really cool schools, it was kind of like, why am I not doing that? Like, why isn't it me? But I walked on at the University of Tennessee.
I did not know that.
I was a walk-on all 4 years.
No.
Yeah, all 4 years I was a walk-on. I mean, up until my senior year, I had one at bat in the SEC, two at bats in the SEC, one versus Dustin Science, who's here right now,
sure.
At Texas A&M on the road, and then one at Missouri on the road. So none of them were at home, but I had two at bats going to SEC before my senior year.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, so I probably should have told that at the beginning of the podcast.
No,
but yeah,
we were talking about the patience part, right. But I didn't know it was walk-on status.
Yeah. Okay. I was a walk-on for 4 years at Tennessee.
So now we do have to talk about it a little bit. What was it about you then? Obviously, you love the environment, love the school, love the coaching staff. But what was it that kept you coming back, even at walk-on status, for years where I'm sure in the back of your mind you're like, I can play somewhere.
Right, right. And with the whole COVID thing that went around, people were always asking me, like, why don't you transfer, like, go closer to home and stuff like that. But it was really, like I said earlier, the family thing. I don't think I could have found anything else that really brought the family aspect to it. Even though I wasn't playing, Coach Vitello, he would always come up to me and ask me how my day was going. And he would literally, he'd take me out to dinner some of these times. And it would just be like more of a family, like kind of like a at-home meal that just really brought comfort into that university.
And I wonder, so that's a really strong testament to your character and your obviously belief in yourself. Was it a situation where you were like, I'm going to get my shot? Or was it like, I just love this place. I love the environment. I don't know if it's going to happen.
I mean, going into the falls, I mean, I would always get my shot. I mean, he loves competition. So we would always scrimmage each other, and I'd get my shot. And then at the end of the day, it is what it is. I would get beat out. But I knew eventually I was going to force his hand to make me play every day. And my senior year, that day came. And I never took a look back.
How was that feeling? Like, I mean, again, I've never played at these levels, but I imagine, like, oh, when in a situation they put the team names on the roster, you go look and you're like, I made the team. But you've been through this, you know, 4 years, and then it's like, when was that moment like you're like, okay, you're the guy. You're going to put our trust in you.
I mean, I would go out there, and I always knew I was the guy. I mean, I'll go out there and not get the outcomes I wanted, but every time I step into the box, I was a guy hitting 400 with 20 home runs. That's just who I was. But then at the end of the season, we had our exit meetings, and Coach Vitello was like, at the end of it, he was like, listen, whatever you need, I got you. So I really think that, like, from the beginning, like the whole family thing and the whole time of me just waiting it out and finally getting my turn and just really, like, going with it was really something that he took it to heart, and I took it to heart. So mutual thing.
Now, what is it something about Trey that people that may just see on the outside, but like, what is something about Trey that they may not know? What would surprise people if you told them something about yourself?
Besides wanting to be the hockey player or the marine biologist.
That's pretty good. Those are both really good stuff.
I don't know. I'm a pretty even-keeled person, like you said. I really don't like baseball, a game of, like, it's a roller coaster, and they always say you want to even it out and not go through the ups and downs. So I really just, I don't know, I just try to go out there and just stay focused to my approach and really just do what I've been doing since I was a kid, and that's just ball out.
Does it feel like a business?
I would say now that, like, I'm not going to classes and, like, going to all these extracurricular things, coming here and just perfecting my craft and getting better every day, it feels like a business. So I really like it, but at the end of the day, it's a fun business. I love it.
Yeah, I was going to say, so there's some life adjustment stuff there, but so far, you feel really good about it. How do you kind of work on, like, you're working on different things every day. But one of the things that is, I think, a challenge, especially for kids of color going through and up the ranks, is always just, like, fundamentals. Like, just getting the basic fundamentals so then you can start building upon those. How do you keep your game sharp now? And I know you're working on different things every day, but do you map it out? Like, today I'm going to work on this, today I'm going to work on that.
I mean, not really. I mean, every day I just try to get that 1% better at something I wasn't as good as I was yesterday. So that's really kind of something I live by, too, is just get 1%. Like, wake up out of bed and just do something that's going to make you better so you can perform out there on the field. So really, really nothing too special, but I really do take pride in my defense. So anytime I can work on my defense, I know if pitcher gets in a jam, he gets me a ground ball, I don't want to be the one to mess it up. I want to be the one that they can count on, just not even turn the head, just walk straight off the field.
Last question here, ladies and gentlemen. The voice you're hearing is Trey Lipscomb, third baseman for Harrisburg Senators. I always like to end on something like this. Not exactly, but something like this. If you, again, it could be current or it could be, you know, in the past or anything, but if you could just, like, sit down and do what we're doing, but you can pick somebody's brain, whose brain would you want to pick? Who would you want to have a conversation with, whether it's baseball or just life
stuff?
Yeah,
I mean, this might sound a little bit cliche, but probably LeBron James. I mean, he's...
Why not?
Yeah, he literally, why not? He's the greatest of all time. In my definition, he's the GOAT. So I really like what he does and what he does off the court, how he's raised his family. So just to sit down and have a conversation about him, not just about sports, but just about, like, the lifestyle.
Very nice. We're going to have to end it there, ladies and gentlemen. Trey, tell everybody where they can follow you, keep up with you, follow your journey, because it's, look, you're always, look, you're showing up and showing out now. It's only a matter of time, my man.
Right. I mean, like you said, I'm in here at Harrisburg on the Senator, so you want to come out and watch a game. The stadium's pretty cool. We get a lot of fans down there, but my Instagram handle is tlips22, and my Twitter is tlips03, so if you want to follow me, I try to stay on there as much as I can, but like you said, sometimes it gets a little toxic on there, so just kind of just, yeah, you can find me on there.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll have to end it there. Really, really excited. Just had a blast talking to Trey. Until next time, this is the Black Baseball Mixtape. We'll see you soon.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed this episode. We wish Trey nothing but success throughout his hopefully lengthy MLB career. We've got a lot of things coming, a lot more episodes coming. Make sure you're following our Instagram page. We're doing our first ever BBM giveaway on the Instagram page right now. Message me if you want to join our absolutely free group chat. It's in Discord. I will send you the link. Make sure you do that. We've just got a ton of stuff coming as we move forward through this baseball season. Please keep it locked to the Black Baseball Mixtape. It is the fastest growing baseball community dedicated to Black players in the game, and we are welcome to everyone. So make sure you join if you want to join. Make sure you join the group if you want to join. Everyone, it's a welcoming environment that we're supporting Black culture in the game of baseball, and we're going to be doing it for a long time. So, ladies and gentlemen, until the next time, we'll see you.